What's up, everybody? We are back at Writer Stuff. I am John Stamp, your amazing host, as that's what I tell myself in the mirror before I record, though. Anyway, tonight, don't have a ton going on. Overmatch is coming soon, which I continuously tell you all about. I could tell you, I guess I could get into my next project, but I'm still mid first draft, so I don't want to go too deep, but I'd hinted at it a little bit last season. Talking multi-genre with a couple other guys. I'm going sci-fi. I think you guys knew that. It looks like it's going to be at least three books. And I'm going to rotate between a couple more Ty Benhoff thrillers that I've got in the hopper and this new series to kind of cleanse my plate, flipping genres here and there. And I know the business side says that people don't hop genres, but it works for me and this is my thing. So that's what I'm going to do for the next little bit. No title as of yet, because it's new, and of course I hate coming up with those things in the first place. For now, it's codenamed Forsaken, and I can't tell you why because I just came up with that little bad boy last week, and I haven't decided if it's going to stick or not. So far, it is fast characters, even the bad guys are a lot of fun for me, and the world, you got to build your world, and that sci-fi thing is filling out nicely. It's kind of cool to write something, and if I don't know what it is, I just make it up, and if I do it right, you guys aren't going to know the difference. So that's my experiment into the sci-fi world for right now, but more to come once I get a little closer to wrapping that first draft. I got probably 30,000 words to go, so hopefully in the next month or two. Only other thing I got is that had a blast at the Amelia Island Book Expo. Very cool getting to hang out and talk books all day. I think that should be my retirement job at some point. And I am going to do the exact same thing again at Space Coast Books. It's only going to be expanded. It'll be instead of one day hanging out, it'll be 3 days of panels and hanging out with readers, talking books, Cape Canaveral, Florida in June. Then I'm going to be at BoucherCon in Nashville in August for a couple of days. And in answer to your unasked question that just popped in your head, yes, I do choose my conferences based on location. So no offense, but if you live in like the DC, Chicago, or New York City area, you'll probably never see me make a live appearance. But on the other hand, if you live in places like Kona, Key West, or maybe Asheville, I will be there pretty much whenever you ask me to. So just so you know, future reference. Anyway, enough of that stuff. Let's get to it. Tonight, I'm talking to Jeff Circle. Jeff Circle has over 20 years experience in the counterintelligence, assessment, security operations, vetting, protection, policy, investigations, red team, which is on my bucket list, I haven't got to do, insider threat, crisis management. In addition to the intelligence world, he's a veteran of the U.S. Army, a survivor of corporate America. He even worked a dive boat in the Caribbean. And like me, he's an alumni of the South Carolina Law Enforcement Academy. We never worked together, but ran some of the same territory back in the day. I left South Carolina about a year before he got there. Jeff is also the architect behind the dossier, the online go-to for undisclosed intel on today's thriller, mystery, crime, and suspense writers. And I am happy to be a part of it. So, Jeff, thank you for joining me.
You're welcome, John. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, that's a wild and varied career you've got going on there.
The favorite thing is the dive boat in the Virgin Islands. I always love that. Thanks for bringing that up.
I just, you know, well, as I was checking out your bio and we've chatted a little bit before there, I'm like, you're like corporate America, and I was, you know what? I got to cleanse the palate. I'm just gonna go move to the Caribbean and I'm gonna get a tan. Like that's it. It seems like we've had the same issue throughout the career. If somebody comes up with a cool idea, you're like, "Hey, let's throw it out of the window and go see what happens."
I'll tell you what, that was one of the smartest things I ever did. I was in the Army, got out, and after Desert Storm, so in 92, I'm kind of bouncing around, not sure what I'm going to do. And I ended up working a job at MCI. It was a phone company, AT&T's big competition after divestiture, and got into management. And after 5 years of digging in the trenches of middle management, I realized that I didn't want to live in a cube farm. And I didn't have that same sense of teamwork and camaraderie that you miss when you leave the military. So after getting my, after pulling another knife out of my back from, one of my teammates who lived in Arizona, I'm living in Austin, Texas. I don't even know these people. I chucked it, and it's their fault because they sent me down to the Virgin Islands. Well, they sent me to Puerto Rico for an awards thing for a week to say, thanks, great job, you're super. And I said, I really like this. I think I'm going to stay. So, yeah, a couple of months later, I chucked it. I was vested, and I punched out, and I didn't know what I was going to do. I ran into some old Navy guy who had a dive charter, and he said, oh, so you're military? I'm like, yes, sir. He's like, come on in. We'll teach you how to dive, and we'll put you on the boat. And there I was, man. I went going diving in the Virgin Islands in December, January. I was down there for a whole season. It was fantastic. Best decision I ever made.
The first time me and my wife went to Kona in Hawaii, like we're there for 10 days, and it's same thing, like just getting to that mid-career point, and I'm just walking around a coffee farm one day, and I was like, there's no reason for us to actually go back to Buffalo. Like we could just stay here. I'm pretty sure I can pick coffee and I can learn how to roast this stuff. Like I'm pretty sure there's something for us here.
Dude, right before I went to the Virgin Islands, I was in Costa Rica and I had that. I'm like, hey, I can stay down here in Costa Rica and teach English and pick coffee and learn Spanish. Oh, this is gonna be fantastic. And we're my some friends and I from MCI, we're on a boat, we're headed back to land. We were going through the harbor and saw all these boats with the sign on them, and it said Sivende, Sivende, Sivende. And I'm like, what's Sivende? And they're like, for sale. And I'm like, they're all for sale. And I almost stayed in Costa Rica, but I'd already made plans to go to the Virgin Islands.
Yeah, and lucky for me, the brains of the outfit. Luckily, I married a woman who's, exponentially smarter than I am. Otherwise, I would have thrown a lot of things away over the years. Just
Same here, brother.
that sounds cool. I'm just gonna go do that and suddenly be a, I'd end up being a bum someplace if it was up to me.
Same here. I bounced around, but it's given me a lot of worldly knowledge. I mean, I've been to five continents, I've worked in five continents, lived in a lot of crazy places, lived all over, and it's given me a lot of background for writing. Because that research that you talk about, you want to get somewhere and get boots on the ground, like Brad Taylor's really good at that. I know Mark Greene's really good at it. He just got back from Africa in Ghana. And I can picture, Heidelberg, Germany. I can picture Itaewon in Korea, any of the islands, in the Virgin Islands, Mexico, Ecuador, Galapagos. I've been all those places. And it's so easy to draw from people because they're so different wherever you go. I found so many things though that show that we're much more alike than we are different. But when you put them all in the blender and you throw in a couple plot points, wow, you can really come up with some great stuff.
Yeah, and that's the same way for me. I'm trying to. I hit nine countries, before I settled down once the kids showed up. But yeah, it's you go and you meet the right people, and just those little snippets of conversation that you have. There's a guy in Overmatch who ends up being like a local country liaison to help mitigate the issue. A local country liaison with a machine gun, basically. But I
Fully
can
natural.
he just he popped when I was drawing out that character. I remembered a Thai policeman that I had a couple drinks with one night, doing one of those tours, one of those river tours up and through the temples and stuff like that. And this dude was just so much fun. And as I'm sketching him out, I'm like, oh yeah, that's him. I got my guy. And I've met this dude like 12 years ago. And it's like, yep, that's so it's and it's just those little pieces and those little conversations you have, and suddenly, boom, they're the perfect fit for this character that you need. But where was your favorite post?
Well, for the military, see, this is such a hard question. I hadn't been overseas in a few years, and all of a sudden, when I left the Charleston area where you and I were cops, I got picked up by USAR. It was US Army Europe, and they said, hey, we're kind of splitting off, and then we're going to start this thing called AFRICOM. And so, UCOM let all that go, and my first assignment was in Vicenza, working for U.S.
Wow.
Army Africa. And Italy was fantastic, but it's kind of like camping, is what I used to call it. You can get everything you need, it's just going to take a while. And the Italians just don't have that sense of urgency and that squared away, style that some of us kind of, I was still really, attached to. So I miss a lot of the beautiful culture that Italy had to offer because I didn't embrace it right away. Once I did, loved it. And I've been back several times since. Just absolutely love it. Right after that, I moved to Germany. So Germany was beautiful. I mean, it was so squared away. It was like, oh yeah, the train is on time. You need something from the grocery store, it'll be there. Italy was just a little chaotic. So my heart is in Italy. And so here's the thing. I've got the answer for you. It's Italy, because right now that's where we're looking at trying to get back to and move back to, or at least buy another house there and be able to
Nice.
go there anytime. So Italy, phenomenal.
Yeah,
Loved it.
it is funny how you need to be able to downshift. Like, okay, you're not moving as fast as I am. It's like walking down the street and you just realize you're the only one shouldering people out of the way. It's like, okay, time to downshift a little bit, and then you bounce over to Germany. It's like I'm getting pummeled here.
Yeah.
It's like
Yeah,
what
because
happened?
No, you hear about the Autobahn and how the Germans are like going, 150 miles an hour down the Autobahn. I get to Italy and I lived on a chicken road. Is what we call a chicken road because you're playing chicken with whoever's on the other end. But I didn't know that Italy, they have the Autostrada, which is almost just like the Autobahn. It's not quite, but still, yeah, you can fly. Yeah,
Right.
so yeah, a little bit of better of both worlds. Speaking of locations, and again, another good thing for book research, it's France. France has the zest for life that the Italians do, but they're a little more organized. Not as bad as the Germans are. They're not as uptight. So, France is another really good place. Love going there too.
Yeah, those
So.
cultures are so much fun. I've only had about 24 hours in France, and it was one of those things where I was on my way to Africa, and so I had it to the point where I could travel, and I just everything I needed to get started on whatever TDY I was going to, I could last at least a couple of weeks in a backpack. Because it's one of those things you just race to the hotel, throw the backpack down, hit the train, and soak in as much as possible, like all the way through. You got like 6, 7 hours, and that's the one place like I know I have to go back there someday because I got to take the wife. Like she's got to see it. Yeah, even if you just yeah, but
Yeah,
just
I'll throw
there's
out
so
three things.
much.
There is so much. I'll throw out three things for you though. One, the food, can't touch it. It's phenomenal. And the wine is, just amazing. Two, the military cemeteries, the battlefield monuments there. You've got to see at least one or two of them. They are there that you will shift inside of you when you take those places in. And two, really neat. No matter where you go, no matter where I went in France, and I lived an hour away from France, so we hopped the border all the time, went over there. Stopped in a lot of little towns, and
Yes.
almost every little town that we went into, get to the center of town, there's a fountain or some kind of monument to either World War I or World War II, and they'll have lists of who was involved. And the Americans, and a lot of them are small monuments to American. And you think, oh, the French are just, they're all Parisians. Well, that's like seeing all Americas like New York, or oh, yeah,
Yeah,
everyone's from
exactly.
Long Island. That's not America. And France is in Paris. You got to go to these small towns. And if you do, it'll really touch you.
Yeah, and I've got a clock for that. I've got my big guy's 11, my little guy's 7. By the time the big guy's 15 is when I want to do that and just hit all those historic sites. Because right now, we went to Hawaii last year, and I didn't even bother taking him over to Pearl because I knew, at 10 years old and 6, they're not. It's oh cool, there's a boat underwater. But when you go to there, it's such a solemn thing. Like people won't even talk when they're out there on that barge, and it's such a respectful thing that every American just stops and just understands what they're looking at. And I got to wait till they're old enough to absorb it and understand it before I, take them on that tour of that kind of history.
Last year, I know you're not crazy about big cities. I went to Thriller Fest in New York last year and went to the 9/11 memorial, and yeah, it was hollow ground. It is incredible, and it's moving, and just all of that. But like what you said, you go to the Arizona and out in Hawaii, and you're right, it's deathly silent, and I've got goosebumps right now thinking
Yeah, I
about
know, right?
being there and looking out over the water, seeing the oil slick, and just no one talks. That's how it should be. And you get that when you go to France too, because do you think these boys left at 18 years old, some even younger, and they never came home, and they stayed, they're
Right.
still there.
Still
I
there.
feel it's our sworn duty to respect that and to visit if you can.
Yep,
Yeah, it's amazing.
and to kind of, when you take the ferry out, it was when I at least when I showed up, there was very young petty officers that were guiding that were driving the ferry out. I mean, young. I mean, of course, everybody looks young to me at this point, but to contrast that, know that that's the age, that's the person who was volunteering to go do this, sometimes lying about their age,
Yes.
and like 2 years later, I'm at a book signing in a very small town in South Carolina, and I just run into this dude who's messing with an iPad. He's an old guy messing with an iPad, and I'm sitting there, and he's getting frustrated, and he's just like me. He's just getting ready to hit it. And I ask him, I'm like, "Hey, you need a hand?" And so we just strike up a conversation, and as I get to know him, he's 94 years old,
Oh.
and he's sitting in this coffee shop slash bookstore waiting for the dry cleaners to get done with his bomber jacket. That an authentic bomber jacket. And now I go in to get this dude's whole story, and about an hour before this book signing starts, from Brooklyn, New York, lied at 16 to get into the military in 1942, something like that, right after Pearl. And small enough dude that he couldn't fit in like the ball turret, but they made him a navigator, and he ended up going through Europe, Africa. Stayed on for Korea and ended up getting out and during Vietnam. But all these bombers, like the Fortress, the B-25s, the whatever, what I don't know planes, but just to get this, and I had that hour snatch of history from this man, and I still remember it word for word today. Like that's just you don't get to see that anymore, and that generation's just evaporating, and it's special when you get that moment because they're two complete strangers, had no business. Just never would have run into each other. And this dude, I'm getting a slice of American history from this guy. And yeah, there it goes. It's crazy.
That is so rich. I love
Yeah,
it.
it's awesome. It was just an awesome experience. It's such a small one, but yep. But so yeah,
Yes.
so we got you your bio is great on your website, by the way. But yeah, the talking about the recruiter. Telling you how you're going to be doing James Bond stuff just in an office.
Dude, okay, so I don't think we're shooting out video on this, but I've got Jack
I don't do
Stewart's.
video yet. Like you said earlier before we started recording, I listen to podcasts in my car. Like
Yeah, me too.
so, yeah.
So I've got Jack Stewart's Outlaw with me right here, and Unknown Rider was great. And when I talked to Jack last fall, we were in San Diego, and he's a Top Gun fanatic. Well, guess what? 1986, Top Gun. I'm in college, and I'm about to get in my third year, and Top Gun comes out, and I'm like, I want to do that. So I did. I walked in the recruiter's office. Well, I went to the recruiting station, which was, your typical little strip mall thing with four doors, Army, Air Force, Navy, Marines. And I walk up right in the Navy guy, and there he is, like, dude, all righty, I want to be a pilot. He looked at me and said, "Where are you going to college?" And I told him, and like, "Kid, get out of here! No, this isn't for you." I'm like, but I want to go. I want to go Mach 2 with my hair on fire. And so he bounced me over the Army. I walk in the Army and I sit down. This guy, he's about 5'6", and I look at him, and I look behind him, and on the wall behind him was a picture of him in a helicopter. Kid you not. Oh yeah. Oh yeah, that's me at Fort Rucker. Is that an Apache or a Cobra? Yeah, I'm like, so you're a pilot? And he's like, no. I watched it. Like, oh, okay. All right. So, all right. So you're a pipsqueak. And because he looked like one. And so we get to talking, and I'm like, well, can I do that? And he's like, no. And so he pulls out a clipboard, and he starts flipping through it, and he's going down this. He's got, okay, you got 88 Mike, you can be a truck driver, you be, 71 Lima, all these MOSs for the Army. And he gets down to one, and he stops, and he looks at it like he's really giving it some thought, and he's like, huh, 96 Bravo. I don't know about this. It's intelligence analyst. I'm like, that sounds cool. He's like, yeah, I really don't know what it is. They don't tell us. It's like some kind of secret bond shit. Man, he saw me coming. He laid the trap. He said that. I'm like, I'm in. He's like, all right, sure. Let's get you tested. So that's how I ended up in intelligence. James Bond shit. I'm like, yeah, that
Still you're high
guy.
enough on the SFAB.
But
Yeah,
it changed my life.
they if they'd have pulled that on me, they probably would have gotten me because it was like I was the same thing, like high school. I'm like, I'm gonna go in the National Guard, go to college, and but I was dead set. I'm like, I'm gonna be an infantry scout, and they're like, no, you're not. I'm like, yeah, that's what I want to do, and they're like, okay. So we go to MEPS, and they had send me a they slide me a contract for, I guess it was a truck driver, and I was like, I'm not here to be a truck driver. I don't. Do they get guns? And they're like, well, probably. I'm like, well, I'm not driving a truck. Like, they're like, well, don't worry, it's gonna be cool. I'm like, I got a lacrosse game in 2 hours. Either fix this or I need to go home. And it's a 45-minute drive, and I got to warm up. So they wouldn't come off it. I was like, I'm out, man. I was like, I'm not
Wow.
driving a, I'm not driving a truck. But it's funny, I say that. 10 years later, it's in Charleston. Everybody, well, I don't know if it was the same way in Mount Pleasant, but at CPD, everybody on the weekends was a Coast Guard reservist because it was like, I'm either standing outside of bars making my off-duty money or I can go drill. And I was like, I'll go drill with you guys because my sergeant was a chief and my lieutenant was was an E5, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, no,
So I
right.
go do that, I get activated, and guess what? I end up my accomplishment during Operation Enduring Freedom, driving a pickup truck.
Yeah,
They
sure.
got me. They got me either way. They didn't know at the time, but yep, that's what I did. I drove a pickup truck around Charleston Harbor, just surveying marinas. And I was like, okay, it's kind of funny. I remember the irony. I was like, well, they got me. I'm still driving a truck, just a different branch.
All comes around. I signed up as a reservist because I was still in college. I'm like, oh, I just get money and drill on the weekends. They'll finish paying for college and be great. I loved basic training and in my intel school so much. When I got back, I'm like, I want to go. I want to go do that full time. And so the first thing they ask when you get to MAPS is, well, where do you want to go? What do you want to do? Well, my MOS is already set. And I'm like, well, I want to go to Hawaii.
Hey, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Exactly. Yeah, we're gonna. What are they gonna say? No. So yeah, they put me on a plane and I started flying west, and they kept going and dropped me off in Korea. So that was my first year.
Missed it by
First
this
year in Korea.
much.
Yep.
Yeah,
Crazy.
that's funny.
Can't trust them.
I can't trust them. So yeah, that's good times. But yeah, the opportunity just to be like, that sounds cool, I'm gonna go do it. It people look at you sometimes like you're crazy, but it's like, hey, it works out. Like I've had a blast over the last 20 years. They say don't volunteer for anything, but it's actually worked out for me more often than not.
Yeah. No, it worked out. Like I said, changed my life, put me on a really good path that I'm still on today. I'm in my 50s and can't believe how it feels like yesterday. I mean, I can still picture myself at MAPS. Basic training. I can tell you half my squad, my in basic training in 1987. So
That's
good
funny.
time.
And was your intel school in Pensacola, or did you go? Because
Or
we when I was in
Huachuca.
Pensacola, okay, yeah. So
Or
it wasn't
Huachuca.
that is not Pensacola, Florida.
And well, it's hot in Pensacola. I get that. But in my brilliance, I went to basic training at Fort Dix in April and May. So weather-wise, I was in southern Arizona, an hour south of Tucson for June, July, August, and September. 4 months, the hottest months. You know, they said it was a dry heat. And I said, yeah, well, so was an oven. Go stick your head in an oven and see how that works out. It was hot.
Yeah,
Sucked.
that whole dry heat thing is garbage. Like it's that's you know, the same thing. I remember the first time I walked out of the airport in Kuwait, I was like, I'm about to die. I was like, that's
Oh,
like I can't
man.
breathe. Like humans can't breathe here. It's too hot. Like it's
Yeah.
gorgeous airport, nice and clean. And I walk out and I'm like, like I just things aren't working. Like
You
this
yeah,
is
you get to Arif John and your skin just go, it dies.
Yeah,
It's
I just
just
started
weird.
shriveling up. I'm like, I'm amphibian. I didn't know it, but I need to be close to water.
Yes. What a mess. Yeah,
Yeah. Oh,
another br
man.
yeah, so I'm in Korea and so then after that I'm like, can I go to Hawaii now? And they're like, no, you're going to Fort Hood, Texas. I'm like, I didn't know they had
Yeah.
scorpions there.
Yep, those are awesome. They glow in the dark too, so.
Yeah. The my first experience with the scorpion was I used to get up early in the morning for PT and I used to lay my clothes out the night before. So all I could do is I could just get out of bed and just drag myself to where the clothes were, eyes half open. I put on my t-shirt and I looked in the mirror and there was one on my shoulder.
Oh, nope.
I put it on while it was on, and there he was. I mean, you want to talk about waking up at 5 in the morning with a scorpion on your shoulder? No.
Yeah, that's a hard no. That's a hard no for me.
Yeah, so the exterminators came that day.
Yeah, that's why I asked about Pensacola, because when I was there with NCIS, they had a, I guess maybe it wasn't an Intel school, it was a crypto school or something like that. But I can't remember nowadays. It was pilots and crypto. And I was like, those two don't seem to get it together, but I guess they match somehow. I don't know. But the water with the beaches are gorgeous, and that's kind of all that. I was like, yeah, this works. It's not, I'm not in Chicago or Buffalo. I think I've won.
No snow in Pensacola, man.
No snow in Pensacola. And if we do have snow, I'm pretty sure I'm not gonna have to go to work that day.
Nice.
So you run the dossier. And man, that is a deep, deep trove of really cool insight, not only into authors, but into books and the stuff that's current too. It's not like you're running a library. It's like what's coming, what's new, and it's I just how did you come into this? How did you fall into this?
So I'm at Thriller Fest in New York last June, and it was my first conference. And I started meeting all these people. I met Connor Sullivan there, Jack Carr, Mark Greaney, Brad Thor, the big names. But then I met everybody else who was there. Not everybody, but like thriller writers who aren't the Mark Greenies and Brad Thors, the real people that you can talk to and text, you know,
Yeah,
and they'll
the other
respond.
98%.
The other 98%, right? And I went home and I started listening to and reading books from these people who I had just met, which that was a first for me because ever since, you know, Korea in 1988, I'd been reading Clancy and, you know, kept going. You know, I'm in Afghanistan reading, you know, Brad Thor, whoever. Well, now I'm reading books from people I know. And I'm not at Thriller Fest anymore, so I can't walk up to him and say, this is awesome. So I wanted to do something. And I wanted to tell people that these are great writers and they're great people. And that really meant something to me, the personal connection that all of a sudden I had with a couple dozen writers and their books. I felt compelled to get it out there somehow and tell people because my wife got tired of me hearing about how great everything was. So I had that going on in my head, and I was like, well, how do I do it? Well, my background, intelligence, we're doing thrillers, a lot of them are military. So I searched on the internet and I paid for and downloaded this graphic of like a file folder. And it's kind of like a classified document. I'm like, well, that can be my angle because I want to do something different. I don't want to just to be a book reviewer. Yeah, I wanted to get the information out and let everybody know how great these authors were and how great these books were, but I didn't want to do it the way everyone else is doing it. And so I did this goofy little graphic. You have one. You're in the dossier. Your picture's on
I
there,
am
your
proud to be
name.
a part of the dossier. Yep.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad to have you. And so I came up with all these little things about you. And then I'm like, well, you know what? let's not ask the same five canned questions every time. Let's be, one, original, and two, because it's me, let's try to be funny. Let's make it entertaining, because I didn't want it to just be this, you know, the same common stuff. Where do you get your ideas, John? You know, all these things. Tell me about your characters, John. You know, all that. So I really came in from left field with some of these questions, and they're really personal in an appropriate way. And so I came up with a graphic, and I contacted eight people who I'd met at Thriller Fest, or people that I thought would launch this with me. And there were eight of them. Launched with him, people like Steve Stratton, Ilana Berry, Tim Hendricks, Bill Schweiger, and launched with that, and then it started to grow, and I'm like, well, I need to really brush up on my HTML and make a website that actually works a little better than, because I mean, I taught myself HTML like 2000 when it first came out, to everybody who could get on the internet and build a web page. And so it just grew from there. And here's the thing. I started off with, you know, some of those writers who, you know, you can call and text and they'll text you back. Next week, I'm launching Mark Greeny. So yeah. It's really grown. And just like you in your podcast, you know, you talk to people and it's grown and you've gotten more popular. And now all of a sudden, guess what? John Stamp can, you know, contact Brad Thor or you know, Bentley or any of these people, and they'll come on and talk to you. I remember Matthew Quirk said, Matthew Quirk's the guy who did The Night Agent, which was the biggest hours watched on Netflix last year.
And well deserved. Yeah.
No, yeah. He told me, you know what? A lot of us writers live a kind of a solitary life in front of our keyboard. And whenever someone reaches out to us, we're just kind of glad to hear from them. So he did. That's what he said. Yeah. And I've got this great picture of us together in San Diego. And he's just such a nice guy. And it really struck me. You know what? These people are nice. And they do. If they can, you know, they'll talk to you. And if they can answer five silly questions and have a good time on the dossier, I love doing it, because I'm pushing it out to people and letting other people discover John Stamp, Jerome Priestler, Stephen Hartoff, all these, you know, great guys with, you know, a body of work and a ton of life experience. And it's just, it really is. I'm going to say something corny. It's my honor to be a conduit and tell your story and everyone else's story who let me do them on the dossier, to just get it out there. And it's a lot of fun. And in return, that just enriches my life to hear your story, to find out a little bit about you for you. And personally, John, it's really cool because you and I, we were both down at you know, Charleston County Jail, you know, hooking people up. You
know, I can still smell. Charleston County Jail was one of the cleaner jails, and I can still smell it every time I think about it. I can't get out of my bleach and feet and plastic food trays. It's like, oh,
God. Oh, man, I hated going to that.
When I was in Charleston, I got transferred into public housing for about a year. And we actually had a block or two that was in Mount Pleasant, and that ended up being part of my beat. So like every day I'd cross the bridge and go swing through Mount, I can't even remember the name of the road now, but it was an old village. Yep. Like the older part of Mount Pleasant down by the fort, and it was like one street, and I was like, I don't know how this is legal, but I'm, you know, I have a reason to go over to Mount Pleasant. I'm like, cool. I also am I'm gonna deviate and kind of chill down Shem Creek, and maybe I need to check out, see what's going on in Isle of Palms before I make my way back to the peninsula.
We used to patrol the bridge, and someone thought it'd be a great idea to get a Segway. So
that's a good idea. You
know, So third shift, I'm on a Segway cruising the new bridge, and you know, you get to the other end, I'm like, oh, I'm in Charleston now, I guess I better turn around.
Yeah, if you got enough battery.
It did. It could do two trips.
Nice.
You can make it from the station all the way to the bridge, over the bridge, and back twice.
Just barely back, yeah.
Just barely back. Yeah. But I did dump it once. And it didn't react well.
And I don't know, but the segways that they had in the peninsula, like the dudes who would drive them around, it's not like they let them suit up in the bike cop uniform. They had to stay in their blues.
Yeah.
And then they'd have to wear a bike helmet. And I was like, dude, no one's good. That's a hard one to sell if you got to be like, I'm the authority. It's like, that bike helmet says you're not.
Yes.
Like, even when you're in bike cop gear, I mean, don't wear too short of shorts.
Shorts.
That's not just a Reno 911 thing. I think we've all seen the dudes who went a little too short on the shorts. Yeah. But even then, you're still like, okay, that fits. The bike helmet fits the motif. But if you're wearing your dress blues with a tie on and you got a bike helmet out, it's like, nah. That's not gonna work.
Dude, we were at the academy up in Columbia, and we were graduating like the week before we graduated. We did a whole Lieutenant Dangle thing. I've got a picture and I'll send it to you. I did the shorts, sunglasses. It was amazing.
Do you remember the name of that bar that was like a mile down the road? It was over by Lawman's. It was by that gear shop.
Wait, everyone went to get your badge holder.
Yeah, where we all got our really cool custom handcuff keys and gloves.
I don't remember.
But I can't remember the bar next to it. But we almost like broke the day it. Before graduation, we almost blew like curfew by a lot, like to the point of almost being hunted by DPS who were like patrolling the halls. It's like. And the chief I worked for, Greenberg, like if I'd have screwed up that bad, if I'd have screwed up that stupid, he'd have been like, thanks for coming. Like, you're not gonna wear that badge. Like that was one of the first stupid moves I did of my career. There was many to follow, but that was one of the bigger ones. that must shut the lights off before they even got turned on.
Yeah, right at the beginning. Jeez, wow.
Yeah.
Good times.
But good times. When you mentioned the dossier, it's, you know, I've harped on the community of writers that we have so many times, nobody probably wants to hear it again, but you're absolutely right. Like it's funny. It's one of the things I did not expect. You know, I wrote my first book and I was like, holy crap, I wrote a book. And then it's like, the publisher's like, yeah, you should probably go sign some. I'm like, okay, how do I do that? They're like, I don't know, figure it out. I'm like, okay. So people reach out and I start going to do some, and it's like, people want to talk to me. I was like, this is awesome. And
it's crazy.
But there's some, you know, this, like you said, the writing thing's a solitary thing. And yeah. I think it's our backgrounds that, you know, having a job where you talk to people all the time for a living, you know, helps a lot, because at some point you start enjoying the stage a little bit, you know, just being able to talk to people. And it's so much fun. That's why I do a couple of conferences a year, because you don't even go there to sell books. You go there to network and chat with people who enjoy reading your stuff, which is so much fun.
Well, that really smacked me in the face when I walked into BoucherCon. So Thriller Fest was in June in New York, and BoucherCon was in September. So that whole summer I had done the dossier. I had done maybe 20, and I walked in San Diego, and I had my lanyard on with my name on it, and there was a table, and standing at the table was Jack Stewart, Steve Stratton, James Brooks, and Michael. There were like five guys standing there, and they looked at me and they saw my name tag and they said, this is the dossier guy. There's Jeff Circle. And all of a sudden I was welcomed into this group of people who I'd always wanted to be associated with. And I was exhausted at the end of the day, because it was amazing to put the name to the face and to hang out and just, you know, after a half hour, you know, a lot of people are like, well, now what? No, man, we went the whole time, Joe Goldberg was hanging out, and so many people. After a couple days, I remember Tom Colgan walked by the table that we kind of commandeered and planted a flag in. And he's like, Tom Colgan's like, where's Jeff Circle? And everyone's like, oh, he's over there. It's like, we were this group. And everybody, we hung together the whole time. And Matthew Quirk was there for a while, and then David Brown showed up, and just everyone would just land at our table. It was the coolest thing. I loved it.
Yeah,
It
it's
was.
I'm looking forward to BotcherCon this year. I haven't it's the first time I'll have done it, but I'm looking forward to it. And I remember the first like author like you. I started with Clancy and Jack Higgins. When it comes to spy books, Jack Higgins, British guy, but I remember his character was like an actor who was kind of under the gun. I can't remember his name right now to save my life, but that was the first couple of times I got into the thrillers, and I remember just being wanting to be those guys, of course. But then the first guy I actually met at an author signing was Richard Marchenko from Rogue Warrior, the Red Cell series
Way
way
back.
back. Just a massive dude. But it was I had read like five out of his seven books before but at that time. But you meet him, and then the next when I pick up his next book, it's like, oh, I know that dude. It adds, like you said, it adds a little flavor, a little color to it, because you can suddenly hear, his voice in the words. And it was, I mean, those books were super fun to begin with. But actually knowing, having a face and a voice to add to the page, it means a lot. It goes a long way to adding color to them.
Jack Higgins story. So I go to the Virgin Islands and I'm with this guy who owns the dive concession at this really nice hotel. And he brought me on and he taught me how to dive. And before I knew it, I was like one step below dive master. And I didn't want to become a dive master because then that would have been responsible for everybody, like legally. And so I didn't want to do that. He told me a story. He's like, man, I'm sitting in the shop. This guy walks in, and I didn't know who he was. He wants to rent my boat for the whole week, and he wants me to teach him how to dive. He'd never dove before. Guy's name's Jack Higgins. I'm like, Jack Higgins? Jack? He's like, yes, that one. He's like, which reminds me. And he goes over to the computer and he goes to Amazon and I need to order more of the book Thunder Point or Thunder Bay. Thunder Point, Thunder Bay. Because after the week of teaching Jack Higgins how to dive, he wrote that book about Bob
That's
Carney.
cool.
Bob Carney is in the book. Bob Carney was my dive guy. He's the guy who hired
That's
me.
awesome.
So Bob used to order the books and he would sign them on the inside and sell them at the dive shop. And so I'm asking about Jack Higgins. He's like, oh, yeah. I'm like, guy could not dive to save his life. I'm like,
That would be
come on.
me too.
You taught him. Like, nope, he just couldn't. It's the hardest thing. Couldn't get it. But he finally did a little bit, but still, yeah. Jack Higgins. I wasn't there for that. It was after, but yeah, it brings it back to the things that you'll find and the people you'll run into if you get out there and live life and take a chance and experiment with new things and just not be afraid.
Yeah, just go for it. Like I said, they tell you not to volunteer, but it does work out sometimes, right? Every now and then. So with your this might be a sensitive topic, but and I don't want to jade in any way, but with the way like we were talking about before we started recording, the way your TBR probably dwarfs mine, and I have to read a book a week to figure out who I'm talking to next and be able to not ask those canned questions and be able to actually talk about scenes and characters and deep into books and not just be like, where do you get your inspiration from? But so for 2023, let's just look at 2023. What were the what was your favorite out of your 2023 books, and what surprised you the most? And you
That was
can't
another
say
thing.
me because
John Stim, yeah. Blood Red Ivory, everybody.
that would be ethically irresponsible.
Yeah. Blood Red Ivory, everyone.
Yeah. Not that you were going to, but you can't.
So yeah, I this is tough because I have all these writers who I just fascinate me, but then it's too much to read because there are too many books. And so I did interviews based on everything I could find out about each of the people who I wanted to have on the dossier. And most of them I've either read or listened to their books. But people who I was just consumed by people who I totally believed in, and I went through their book and I gave it to everyone who I knew. I wanted to do more for them because I was more into it. They had me. And so I branched out. I did the dossier because I'll do a dossier on anybody who made it through the publication process and they've got a book out and it's doing well. And just looking at it, it's like, yeah, that's my kind of book. So I'll get a copy or I'll listen to it, one or the other. And I'm like, I want to help promote them. I may not have read the whole book yet, but I want to promote them. I want to help them. So I'll do a dossier on them and I'll do all this research on questioning so that the questions are individual and they're custom curated just for that person. But then I'll do the endorsement too if it's someone that I really believe in. And man, you nailed me on a favorite. I'm gonna go left field here on you. I have a favorite dossier and I have a favorite book. Favorite dossier is Tim Hendricks. You've got to go
Yeah.
to thewritersdossier.com because one, he was one of my very first, and I came at it from an angle of let's have fun. My questions were crazy, and he was totally into it. His questions are unlike anyone else's, because they're just so hilarious. And hats off to Tim Hendricks. Love you for what you did and help give the dossier a big boost right off the bat. And Bill Schweigert, he jumped on that bandwagon too because he's got just a wicked sense of humor. And so I love that about those guys. Best book. I've got to go with The Peacock and the Sparrow by Elana Berry, just by a nose to Bruce Borges's book, The Bitter Past. So Elana Berry's book is a spy novel about the Arab Spring in Bahrain, and a CIA station chief. And the primary character, a guy named Shane Collins, who's a case agent. He's a CIA officer stationed in Bahrain, working out of the station there, running people. And just the authenticity with which she laid everything out is one, it's unbelievable, and two, very literary. You look at all these different genres and it's like, oh, there's thrillers, suspense and literary, all this. She was able to combine a beautifully written narrative in a spy novel that has action, there's some romance, there's violence, there's death, and she put it all together, crafted it beautifully. So Peacock and the Sparrow by I.S. Barrie. And The Bitter Past by Bruce Borges, the funniest dossier by far. Tim Hendricks wrote The Instructor.
Yeah. Oh, and yeah. The Instructor is on my list for 2023 too. But quick note,
Fantastic book.
Barry, I'm working on getting Barry to come join me. So if you're listening, hit me up. You got my email. So,
She listens,
but
and I'll text her right now. Gotta
right. But
talk to John.
yeah, Hendricks. I don't know if it was the setting, the character, the deep way he developed the character.
It was
Or just
different, yeah.
having him out in the woods, there
Yeah.
was a spark there that stood outside of the normal thrillers
The
that come
normal,
and go.
yep.
And I'm not saying that every thriller's stock, but there's similarities. But what he did with that character in that setting in that plot stood out. It stood out for me.
Yeah.
And I think I interviewed 30 people last year, and when I think of my la when I think of last year, Hendrix was probably one of the main ones that stumped jumped out the most.
Yeah, I mean, his character, wasn't a CIA guy, wasn't, oh, I used to be in the DEA, or I used to be a Green Beret and now I'm doing something. No, it, yeah, dude, it didn't see that one coming that way. I'm teaching survival skills. I'm out in the woods and I'm scraping by, and I've got family. He brought a lot of authenticity. It was kind of out of left. It was kind of hidden authenticity, because if you know Tim, and he's open about his experience in the military, And the some of the negative effects that people have when they get out, he put that into his character.
Yeah,
And
that was the best way to introduce that character was that fight at the baseball field. It was like, oh man, that frustration of the world not working the way it used to for you. And it was just a great introduction to that character. And I was like, man, yep, there we go. This is gonna be
That's
great.
relatable. You
Yep.
think of some of these super spies and some of these I'm not gonna name character names. They're just like untouchable, I will name characters. Like Mitch Rapp doesn't do anything wrong. He's amazing. And when he makes a mistake, it's okay. He blows through it. Gray Man, holy cow, who could live up to the Gray Man? They're so amazing characters. Pike Logan. Oh, who could be a Pike Logan? Tim's character had a lot of humanity to it. I mean, it he was talking about people that I know, or when you have talked to, that was Tim's character. But then he is a little superhuman too, like all those other characters. He's got some amazing skills, and he was put in a really, tough situation. But yeah, Tim's a great dude, and I'm really excited about his next book coming out too, The Infiltrator. So.
Yeah, me too. And yeah, that's I like the characters that are much more John McClane than
Yeah.
who was I comparing him to? Marion Cobretti. I think in one of the query letters that I wrote for some publisher, I gave up and I got tired of waiting and just went independent. But I wrote in my query letter that Ty Benhoff is way more John McClane from Die Hard than Marion Cobretti from Cobra. And just because McClane. Everybody loves John McClane, but he stumble bumps his way to victory and that little fella. His I think his one slick move is like that last quick draw, yippee happy trails, Hans. That's the only one he made it. And Bonnie Bedelia is pretty lucky he only had like two rounds because he the rest of the movie he would have like tossed that thing over to Hans and it would have gone tumbling out the window. Yeah,
Yeah,
and
I just
I
watched
love
that
the
like a couple
love
months
how,
ago.
but I like how real it is because I mean. Think back to the Police Academy. We were not, close quarters combat operators by any means. What we have a couple of days of clearing rooms,
We had a
and then
couple days of clearing rooms.
on night shift, how often are you clearing entire buildings all by yourself? Like, we're not great at this. Luckily we find them before they find us. But it's and that's the real world. Is like, when's the last time you got in a fight? I don't know, 3 years ago. Well, that guy's not going to jail today. It's like. I'm gonna give me a second. I gotta remember my arm bar takedown.
Right.
Let
Wait.
me go back through the six steps real quick in my head and see if this still works.
Exactly. Oh man, I bet you had the same combatives instructor in Columbia as I did, man. This dude, he was like legendary there.
Oh yeah, bald guy,
Bald
older
guy,
bald, the
yeah.
old bald guy that was like a jujitsu black belt or something like
He was
that.
a he was
Yep.
he decided to use me as the punching bag for the hammer. So I'm standing there and he comes up behind me and just wails on my shoulder muscle, what it's called up here, and my knees buckled. I couldn't believe it. And it's like,
Like you
and
got
then
me.
so he's like, see, it works. Just walk up to someone and hit him from behind.
Yeah. Buffalo. They'll never see it coming. Yeah,
Jeez.
that was like at least he didn't practice a brachial stunt on you.
Oh, the
Lights
brachial
out.
stun.
Yeah,
Yeah,
lights out.
the down in the leg, the side, the
Yeah.
break it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like,
Oh
oh
man,
boy.
the
Yeah,
sting.
that guy's probably still teaching now.
He probably is.
Yeah, just living in the mat room. Yeah. That but I mean that goes back to the characters. It's like, yeah, it's like, when I think of Ty, he's an 1811. They're not kicking in doors. That's not their gig. And but hey, let's see what happens when he has to. Maybe he makes it, maybe he doesn't. If he doesn't make it, the series is really short. But yeah, that's funny. I first thought of Hendrix as well. On the flip side of that, what are you looking forward to in 24? What's coming down the pipe?
Oh boy. I have Mark Graney next week. Really excited with the Chaos Agents coming out. It's a big week actually coming up next week and the week after. General Tata, He's got the
Yeah.
Phalanx codes coming out. Just there's some really cool stuff coming out right now. And then the California Bear is getting a ton of attention by Dwayne Swierczynski. I really can't pronounce that very well. And then Smoke Kings by Jamal Mayfield. Couple books getting a ton of love right now. Just phenomenal. Someday I'm gonna have Mae Cobb on. I've got her dossier ready to go, and she's promising me answers. Something else I learned, John Land has written 60 books.
Wow.
And I'm sorry, John Land, man, I love you. I got a text and I didn't know who it was from. I didn't answer right away. And 2 weeks ago, it was Sunday and I was home by myself trying to get ready for the week. And I'm like, hey, wait, there's a text. I didn't never really responded. So I responded and I apologized. I'm like, dude, I'm sorry I missed it. Him and Jeff Ayers have written a book together, comes out next week. And so we're doing a dossier on that. And that's gonna be really cool because John Land, just epic the stuff he's done. I mean, just like I said, 60. So him and Jeff did a new book called Leave No Trace. I've got the digital copy. And it sounds phenomenal. And I can't wait to meet him at Thriller Fest because John and I think Jeff, but I know John has been to every one. He's one of the few people left who's been to every Thriller.
Yeah, I will get to Thriller Fest. I was bagging on New York City a little bit, but I'm just not a city guy. But I do love New York City in the wintertime, and I will get up there for Thriller Fest at some point. And I do like miss, pizza and dirty water dogs just as much as everybody. You guys don't get mad at me. So I will be in New York City at some point, but I'd much rather go
Of
to
course. Now, the neat thing about the dossier is it's a living, breathing thing now because a lot of these authors will have, at least one book a year, some even two. Because I just did Jack Stewart's Unknown Rider. He gave it to me when we were in San Diego and I read half of it on the plane. It was phenomenal. And now Outlaw's coming out next week. So a couple of nights ago, I emailed Jack and I'm like, "Hey man, I've got three questions. I'm gonna pop three questions. I'm gonna refresh your dossier for you. Punch that back out all next week. We're gonna highlight it, feature it on the website, put it on social media." And so I'm just redoing these. I did with Taylor Moore. Guess what? Got another book coming out. Connor Sullivan's working on Red Falcon right now, so that's coming out. Ryan Stack has got his coming out, Out for Blood. So it's one book after another. It's
It's hard to
almost
keep up.
perpetual. Yeah, it's hard to keep up, but it's becoming perpetual because I'm closing in on 70 people in the dossier, and when they're knocking out a book a year, and some of them like I said, Jack's got two coming out next year. Yeah, it's one, it's easier because I have that relationship established and built, and the format for their dossier is already created. I just got to change some stuff around, slap in a new cover and maybe new author photo, but. No, it's a lot of fun. I mean, I know a lot of Barry's doing a new one. Tim's got The Infiltrator coming out. So, next book you we're gonna refresh your dossier. Terrence McCauley's been keeping me busy with all the stuff he's doing.
Yeah,
So
eventually my goal is 2 a year, but until I can retire, which is a couple of years away, it's 1 a year if I'm lucky. And it's only because I'm not gonna rush a plot. I'm not gonna rush a book to get it out. But I mean, eventually it's if I can run retirement the way I want to, it'll be at least 2 a year. And doing this thing, it just more than once a week. This is just so much fun.
your intro sounded really cool, and I'm glad you're writing the sci-fi thing because that's unexplored. Well, not unexplored, but when you think of thriller, mystery, crime, suspense writers. You're writing sci-fi. That's good for you. That's exciting, and I can't wait for that to come out.
It was scary,
Yeah.
because you read, if you try to read like most space operas, you try to read, unless it's Star Trek or Star Wars, it's reads a little fake. So I was just afraid. I wouldn't even think about it for the longest time, because I'm not going to do it unless it's going to be as cool as Star Trek or Star Wars. And when I say as cool, at least in my head, at least is genuine. But the weirdest thing, I'm watching 48 Hours with Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy one night, and we talk about like where the ideas come from, and I'm watching it, and it wasn't Nick Nolte and it wasn't Eddie Murphy, it was the two bad guys. I'm watching the two bad guys. I'm like, I would love to put those two in a space station and just watch them wreak
Too
havoc,
bad.
and then have somebody, all by themselves, the only law there is, have to try and catch them. And I can do that with spaceships and technology and all kinds of crazy shit, and maybe throw a droid in there too. I'm like, and I'm like, here we go, I'm off.
I loved what you said too about, you know what, I can just make it up,
You
and
can't, yeah.
in the thriller space, we still have parameters, we can't fly. But hey, I need a piece of equipment that does this. Oh yeah, well, that was created 300 years ago.
Yeah, I do. I am keeping for my first draft, I'm just kind of word vomiting, and there's many places where it's like pound, 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 pound. I'll figure out what that is later. But I know that I'm gonna be on a quick down and dirty for astronomy, astrophysics. Probably gonna spend a lot of time on like NASA and JPL's website, trying to figure out some kind of rocket terminology. Geology is going to be a part of it. Metallurgy is going to be part of it. So my research is there, but here, instead of like making sure I get current technology right, I can take the parts of current technology and I'd be like, what's this look like 150 years from now? It's different. So I'm again, it's an experiment. It might fall on its face, but I can say, hey, I take a shot at, sci-fi, at some point. So
Well, here's the thing. If you haven't had, and I've listened to a lot of your episodes, I don't know if you had Boyd Morrison on. I know you
Yet.
haven't had him on lately. He worked for JPL, for the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Talk to Boyd. He'll help you
Gonna
out.
need to talk to him. Yeah,
He's
he's
a
on the
great
list.
guy. He's in the dossier. Tell him, Circle sent you. And I mean, he's part of the Big Brain Club. I mean, he won Jeopardy.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. That's wild. So pivoting, as I got a couple other questions, but normally don't keep people past like an hour. So I want to talk about your project,
Wrap it up.
Silo, like Purity of Intent. Walk me through Silo, and because as I'm checking it out, I'm like, man, I can't wait to read that, because you explain it, but when I'm checking out what you're working on, I'm like, we need that in real life just to check our own, political machine that we have in this country right now. So
So I'm Silo stands for Special Intelligence Logistics and Operations. It's everything you need to run a spy agency. But I'm sitting in real life at a desk in Germany and working pulling some intelligence reports down and reading some things, and there's just a lot of things that I'm seeing that we're not doing anything about, and I'm getting kind of frustrated. And so that kind of gave me an idea for a book. And it was you've got an analyst who doesn't think that we're heading in the right direction, we're not doing the right things, we're not addressing the right issues that are out there. And so my character is female, Alexandra Watson. She goes off and she kind of starts working a side project, but she used to be a cop. So she does a murder board and starts putting all her intel on this board to kind of support a theory that she has that's going on. And she runs into a roadblock and she ends up needing help because her superiors are all part of the No Colonel Left Behind program. And they're not really concerned, they're living the life. Happens to be in Italy, and they're just going to lunch, and so she's working on this project, and the threat's coming from the Middle East, and so she knows someone in Mossad from when she was a cop. Ends up talking to this person, and the big golden rule is you don't share intel with other
yeah.
entities outside of the circle,
And sometimes not even within your own government.
absolutely, yeah,
That's
left hand
helpful.
right left hand right hand. So she ends up breaking the rules and talking to this guy. He ends up being a member of Silo. So Silo is a clandestine presidential task force started by President Kennedy after the Bay of Pigs invasion. And if you know your history from that period, Kennedy and the CIA didn't get along very well for a lot of different reasons. And even to this day, some people think that they had him killed, but that's beside the point. That's not what this is about. He created his own little cadre of intel people, and he needed someone who was good at special intelligence. He needs someone who's good at logistics, someone who could run it in operations. So that's Silo. And through presidential executive order that was kept secret, this organization supported him, and then he died. But the charter was, hey, continue this mission because it's the right mission. You can't have all the control in one place like the CIA, because he didn't trust the CIA. So Silo just continued to grow and evolve. And the way it works is you have normal people doing normal jobs. Like my character, Alex Watson, was working as a civilian GS employee in the DoD as an anti-terrorism analyst. Silo members are everywhere. They're in the DMV, they're in the IRS, they're DHS, they're in DEA, they're the CIA, they're everywhere, NSA. Silo, little, but it works in silos. So I can be working at the NSA and not know anyone else who's Silo. But guess what? Someday I'm going to get a tap on the shoulder and say, hey, we need you to go to the system and find this out. Or hey, tell me about your boss, or tell me about your project you're working on. And that all goes up into the silo. And at the top, there's a director of operations, there's a director of logistics, director of intelligence. So my character gets kind of sucked up in that because Silo sees what she's doing because she brought it to him. And she says, what's going on? I need some help here. And so she gets brought into the world of Silo. So that was book one. Had it edited. It's unpublished. While it was being edited, I wrote another book, and I'm actually pitching that book now. To agents, and trying to tell the story, same thing, same characters. It's my main character, Alex Watson, and her sidekick, who's an office-bound Navy SEAL. The two of them together, a real good Laurel and Hardy kind of situation, or any partner. They've got their differences, and they work really well together. But again, it's they're seeing an issue out there in the world, and they're going at it. And now they've got some cover from Silo. So really excited about getting that out there. Already got book three. I started editing book three today. So
Nice.
we're going down the road. We'll see what happens. But thank you for your comments, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, man, I love that premise. And that just the more you think about it, having that check on, the DC being what it is, like there's priorities aren't always what they should be and focused on the right things. And to have a secret check on that kind of abuse of power, the more I read the news, I'm like, man, those guys would be great.
Well, the second book with that, the one that I'm pitching now, actually, as book one, the working title is Vendetta Agenda. So it has an international element, but it's more domestic because there are some domestic guys who are doing a couple really bad things together based on some real life technology that was abused during Operation Enduring Freedom and Iraqi Freedom. There was a certain surveillance device and platform that was used, and it was exploited. And they're up to some shenanigans that Alex Watson finds out about and go from there. It has a lot to do with polygraph too. That's a whole nother reason. But yeah, it's NSA centric with what they're doing. And yeah, we kind of break into that. It's a lot of fun.
I love it, man. I hope to see it soon is all I can say. And but it's the follow-up question to that. You get your deal with the Big Five. You're on every capstan and Barnes and Noble and Books a Million. Technically, you can't write your own dossier. So who's going to write your dossier for you? I'm just
Oh,
saying.
I love it. I love it. I can't do my own dossier.
Can't do your
Wow.
own dossier. That's not how they work.
You're right. Ryan Steck's gonna do my dossier.
There
If
you
you're if you if you're already taken, you got a lot going on. Yeah, I'll ask Ryan to do
Nice. Yeah,
it.
I'm always available. Part of the
All right, you're
community.
on the list. You're at the
Yep.
top of the
Nice.
list.
That's right. Yeah, I'm the adjunct intel collector.
Adjunct
Yeah,
dossier.
adjunct collector. Yep.
Well, here's the thing. I I started doing this thing with Jeff Clark where he was asking dossier questions on his podcast.
I
And
got you
then,
spooked.
yeah, so we had this little cross-marketing thing going on. It was really cool. And had a really good time with that, with Jeff, listening to his stuff. And hey, we can do a collaboration here.
Yeah, I can give you a heads up on who's coming, and
Love
I'll feed, I'll at least feed one question every time. You can see you've listened, so you can tell that we ramble every now and then. So who knows
it.
the time
No,
frame?
and so what I do is then I promote on social media, hey, John Stamps, writer stuff. Go listen to his interview with, Tim Hendricks. And oh, by the way, there's a bonus dossier question on that. So whatever.
Well, not only that, but we can embed the interviews into the dossier if you want. That
Exactly.
could
There you
work
go.
too. There, that's now we
Just
got our own
helping
little
people out.
agency going.
Love it.
So yeah, we're getting up on an hour, and I don't like to keep people too late on a Thursday night. But you've lived that servant life, so same question goes to everybody. Veterans, you've got both the veteran piece, the law enforcement piece. So very simply, you've got a an 18-year-old kid just graduated high school, and he's walking past the recruiter's office wondering, what do you tell him?
Go in head first. You don't have to think about your whole life all at once, because I looked at it one day at a time, and I got out after Desert Storm. And a lot of me still to this day wonders what it would be like if I had stayed, because no one told me at that age how fast time flies. And you know what? That retirement would be nice right now. And that's it. Fortunately, I have VA healthcare. There are enormous benefits to getting in and staying in. I'm this kind of personality that kind of went off into another direction, and I made it work, and I had a great time. My life isn't over, but wow, if I'd have stayed, I can't imagine the things that I could have done. And so I've always believed in the Israeli, concept of, conscription, of doing something. And if you don't join the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, or Coast Guard, or Space Force, if we're saying that, do something that gives of yourself, and before you know it, it'll give back, and you will be a better person for it. That's what you've got to do. If you go in, I don't think you'll ever regret it.
Yeah, at least it'll broaden your horizons. And yeah, I'm not very popular for this, but if it was up to me, you'd come out of high school and you'd do 2 years and not as national service. Not saying everybody goes to the military, but we would have a military track, a emergency services track, infrastructure track, medical track, all those hard to fill servant positions that are not getting any better. Everybody would have to contribute for 2 years. But that's not until I have a feeling that's going to be a rough platform to get elected on. So I don't think anybody's going to have to, if RFK, if you're listening and if you got a shot at winning, just think about it. I'll be an advisor.
John Stamp, you got my vote.
That's right. But no, man, I appreciate you coming to join me. And anytime you want, you come back on. I didn't even get to all the questions I had for you. So. And I hope I see you at BotchCon in August.
Oh, you definitely will. I'm already registered. It's just a hop down from Northwest Ohio. So yeah, we'll definitely go out. I'll buy you whatever you want to drink. Yeah, we'll have a good time. And seriously, you've got a slot. You've got a last minute I need to fill. Call me.
Yeah, anytime. I probably will, because this is a it's a dynamic business.
Dynamic. I love it.
All
You're a
right, thanks,
dynamic
man.
host. Thank you,
All
John. I
right.
really appreciate it.
All right, good night, everybody.